We're beginning Parashat Toledot. Parashat Toledot. And this parasha is really the beginning of Jewish history in many ways. We've been dealing with creation, the creation of the Jewish people, Avram and Yitzchak, who prepare the strengths of the Jewish people. And in our parasha, we really have the conception of the Jewish people as Yaakov, who is also named Yisrael, who will live out his life as a journey, which will be a prototypical journey of the Jew. The Jew starting off in Israel, having to leave his father's land, having to go into exile, having to contend with problems with the children. The Yaakov is Yisrael. Avraham and Yitzchak, so they're standing up to the tests, which also represent the tests of the Jewish people, but to a greater extent they're preparing the genes, the spiritual structure of the Jewish soul. Yaakov is going to do the same, but is also going to live a life which is much more a living of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. It is much more a life that is representative of what we are to contend with. And so our sages right away tell us Yitzhak and Rebecca can't have children, and then when Rebecca finally gets pregnant, so the pregnancy is difficult, there is a constant struggle going on in utero. Yaakov and Esav, there are going to be two opposing forces in the world. And in truth, Avram also had a nemesis that was ongoing, known as Nimrod, from the day of Avram's birth. Yaakov's nemesis, though, is in utero. Yaakov's nemesis is his twin brother. They both have equal representation. Esav's calendar goes by the sun. Yaakov has a nickname called the sun. Yaakov's nickname is Shemesh. Esav is born, he is Asui. He is like a self-made man. Even when he's a baby, he has hair, like he's born with a beard and a hair on his chest. He is like a man. Esav is the Ish Sadeh. And Yaakov is the Ish Tam. They both have tremendous representation in the world. And so Rivka has this terrible pregnancy and she's suffering and she wants to ask God, what's going on here? What's this all about? And so she is told by the prophet that she shouldn't worry. This is a sign of two great nations that are to emanate from her. Two great nations that will live till the end of time. Esav has his portion, seven peoples that he conquered. Just as we have our territory, we have seven nations, he has three. Esav got Mount Seir, Esav got his territory, we got ours. And the time we're going to meet is way down the road. Yosef is going to take over, is going to take on Esav. But Esav's going to last till the end of time. The difficulty that begins in utero signifies the difficulty that's going to be throughout time. And that's why Esav is the grandfather of a child named Amalek. And Amalek is all the hatred, all the venom you could imagine against the Jewish people. It's all encapsulated by Amalek. So Rivka is told, don't worry. The reason it's so difficult is because you're mothering two great nations. And when she finally gives birth, so the first one comes out all red, Esav. And this signifies the strength of Esav that predates the strength of Yaakov. The success of Esav that predates the success of Yaakov. Esav is so red that Yitzchak is concerned for his health and does not circumcise him. And after a year or two, he sees the child is fine. So he says, okay, this must be just his nature to be red. And if I waited this long, I'll wait till he's 13. And when he's 13, he says, no, are you doing that to me, Dad? And so Esav remains uncircumcised for life. The two grow up, and initially you cannot discern who is more pious, who is less pious, who is right and who is wrong. And finally, when they hit 15, as Rav Pesach Zatzal would classically comment, you'd see two young men walking down the street, twins. They look the same, and in our terms today, you'd say one of them had slightly longer payas, one of them had his tzitzis out slightly longer, one of them was always careful to carry around the sefer with him, and that was the one known as Esav. Esav is always there to show you how pious he is. It has nothing to do with what's going on inside. So Esav is called the Ish Sadeh, man of the field. Why is he called Ish Sadeh? So Sadeh is a term, it's not a good term in Tanakh. Sadeh is the description of where a girl is raped. Sadeh is the description of bad things. Sadeh is the acronym for Shofech Dam Ha'adam. So Esav is always bringing Yaakov his delicious venison, the food that he hunted, and Yitzchak has a favorite named Esav. And here we have a discussion among the commentaries. Was Yitzchak aware of who Esav was? Only Yitzchak intended for Esav to fight for this world and Yaakov to merit the world to come? Or was Yitzchak really taken? And here the simple reading is that Yitzchak was taken. That's the simple reading of our sages. In the opening Medrash in Mechilta, the Medrash begins by describing how the patriarchs destroyed their own children. The Medrash says they loved them so much. Imagine Avram, until he's 86, he doesn't have a child, 87, he finally has his first child, Yishmael. So the Medrash says he was too kind to him. And that's why Yishmael turned out the way he was. He was spoiled. Esav, the same thing. Yitzchak was too kind to him. One of the responsibilities of a parent is to be demanding. And so the Medrash says a parent who does not demand when the child is young will end up regretting it when the child grows old. And that's what happens. Avram can't handle Yishmael in his house anymore. Yitzchak lives to see how Esav is not the star he thought he was. So Esav is a hunter. He goes out into the field one day and he meets up with Nimrod. And Nimrod, well, he was the arch nemesis of Avram Avinu. From the day Avram was born, Nimrod tried to kill him. And he's the one who put him in the furnace. And he's the one that came with the four kings fighting the five kings. He is repeatedly turning up trying to destroy Avram Avinu. He's the one that initiated the unification of the planet for building the Tower of Babel, where his plan behind the scenes was, I'll unify everyone under me, and then I'll become the pagan god, and there will be no escape from the monotheists. That's why God intervened and didn't allow this UN, because God saw where it would lead. But Nimrod is always there trying to destroy Avram. And so out goes Esav, he's 15 years old, he's hunting, and he meets up with Nimrod. And Nimrod says, these are my forests. No hunting here without a license from me. And Esav says, who are you? So Nimrod says, I'm King Nimrod. And I'll show you who I am. And Esav says, let's have it out. So they agree to have a duel the next day. And Esav comes home and he tells his brother Yaakov, what am I supposed to do? So Yaakov tells Esav, look, Nimrod, that thief, he inherited a special jacket that God made for Adam in the Garden of Eden. And he wears that jacket. Adam gave it on until they got out of the ark, and then it was stolen, and then Nimrod stole it. It went through the generations. Through thievery, it ended up in Nimrod's hands. The Medrash goes through exactly who passed it to whom and how it got there. So when Nimrod's wearing that jacket, that's a God-made jacket. You won't be able to overcome him. The reason everyone worships Nimrod is because when he's wearing that jacket that's made by God, so all the animals come and bow to him and no one can overtake him. You have to make sure he takes off that jacket. So what you do is when you come to fight him, you tell Nimrod, okay, we'll fight, but just a second, let's take off our jackets. And when he takes off his jacket, you nab him that second. And that's what he did. According to another Medrash, Nimrod and his men went hunting, searching for Esav. And finally, Nimrod split up with his men, and then Esav told Nimrod, let's just take off our jackets, and Nimrod turned his back on Esav, and that's when Esav pounced him and killed him. But the simple understanding is that Esav was just a very strong warrior. So on that day, Esav kills Nimrod, he kills his son, he rapes a girl, he comes home, he's had his day, and he comes home out of breath. He's a little bit scared of Nimrod's men, and the same day Nimrod dies, Grandpa Abraham died. So Yitzchak is sitting in mourning, and there was an ancient custom, as is the case with many halachos and customs that we have today, They were customs that were accepted by much of the world before the Torah was given, as Maimonides and others writes, and is evident from the Torah, that before the Torah was given, there were certain things that were norms in the world that the Torah then adopted and said, okay, this is what I want you to do. I'm simplifying a more complex concept, but in general, we find there were customs that were adopted by the masses long before the Torah was given, and the Torah said they were correct in adopting them. We have midrashim that discuss how come the world came up with these ideas, but that's not for tonight. So Yitzchak is sitting mourning over his father, and Yaakov is making a stew what do they call that stuff? Lentils is the orange stuff. They say lentils is the orange stuff. I know they say lentils, but I'm not sure.
Lentils is the bean.
The orange bean?
It's like kidney beige.
Kidney beans? Yeah, so I think it's the beige lentil bean. He's cooking that for his father. We have a custom that when a person loses a relative, we feed them something round to symbolize that the world is round, it's a cycle. And also to symbolize that something round is whole, meaning it's not a broken at the top, it's a whole thing, to symbolize that sometimes you have to keep your mouth whole, keep it shut. You might regret what you say at times like this, it's better to be silent. So you have Yaakov is preparing this meal for his father Yitzchak, and Esav comes in from the field. And this was a gift that God gave Abraham. Technically, Abraham lived less than his father did, and we assume that a person should usually live out the same number of years as his father. And Abraham did not, and our tradition is that this was a gift. God had promised him he would die in peace. In other words, he would not see his children or grandchildren suffering or going down the wrong path. And had Avram lived that day, he would have seen his grandson become a murderer and a rapist that day. So that was a gift, so to speak, God gave him. Sometimes it's a gift not to witness what happens afterwards. Yes?
I saw that Rashi brought that you should worry 5 years before and 5 years after when you... So it's 10 years, you got to be worried.
Right? Right? It's a long time to worry, right?
Wait, you're worried about what?
5 years before you hit your parents' age and 5 years after you hit your parents' age. Yes?
It's so bizarre that somebody, a child of Yitzhak, grandson of Abraham, wasn't circumcised. I mean, it's their mitzvah, their obligation to do that. At least to say that this child, even if you want to believe that he was strong enough at that age to refuse it, to be circumcised, which is called a miracle. I mean, you don't have that kind of...
At 13, he was independent enough that he was out hunting. He was his own man at 13.
Right. I mean, it's true. I mean, to live in that house and to be this false, pious person, it doesn't fit with it. If you're this false, pious person, how can you square that with refusing to be...
So it could be he said, "Dad, don't worry, I'll take care of it."
Okay.
Meaning, we don't know what he said to his father, what Yitzchak was thinking.
Right.
The Medrash doesn't address it.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'm bothered by the same question, and this is the answer I considered. But being that the Medrash doesn't say it, I didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
Meaning, I agree with the question.
6'2", 13-year-old, so theoretically,
How old was Cleopatra? How old was Cleopatra when they were fighting a world war over her? Right.
But wasn't Rivka, because it says that when she went to the well, she was modest and beautiful, and they talked about her as a 13, 14-year-old.
Right.
Something that says she could be 14.
Right.
She was 3. So
correct. There are opinions about whether she was 14 or 15, right?
20 years before you got children.
Well, that's no problem. Today they don't start so bad.
You have to describe a 3-year-old as beautiful. And
usually as comely as the media. It's a little odd. Well, it's pretty odd.
I
don't
want to
let it go on.
So Yaakov gave Esav the advice how to win Nimrod, and Esav comes home with that special jacket. And Yaakov tells Esav, Esav says, "Hey, what you cooking?" So he tells him, "I'm cooking this dish." So Esav says, "Give me some." And Yaakov says, "You know, Grandpa died today. I'm making this for Dad because Grandpa died today." And Esav says, "So?" And Yaakov says, you don't feel like you're part of the family? And Esav says, you tell me. I just killed two people. Am I a descendant of Avram? Is that what people say about me? You know, lucky him, he's a descendant of Avram. It's like Al Capone saying, my grandfather was the Chafetz Chaim. Yeah, you know, people would say, poor Chafetz Chaim, he has a grandson named Al Capone, right? Doesn't do him any good. So, Esav says, you know, I get nothing out of being named a descendant of Avram. That's not the direction I'm leading. That's not the direction of life I'm leading. So, Yaakov says to Esav, then why don't you sell me your rights to the name of the family, the firstborn rights? And Esav says, well, I stand to gain nothing from it. You can have it. Give me the beans. And Yaakov says, fine, let's sign a contract. And they do. And they sign a contract. And in that contract, Yaakov already says, I want to purchase from you also the rights to the Me'aras HaMachpelah, the burial plot. And they throw that into the deal. And then he gives them to eat, and he gives them to drink, and he gives them the lentils. And Yaakov walks, and Esav walks out laughing. He says to himself, what difference does it make? Chances are I won't outlive my father. What difference does it make? I'm living a life of crime. We're talking about an inheritance. I don't envision myself inheriting. Who cares? Yeah, Esav walks out laughing. There's a discussion. Some of the commentaries say that Yitzchak was not as good a businessman as Avraham Avinu. Why was Yitzchak taking meat from his son? Because he couldn't afford it. Because Yitzchak wasn't doing good at business. His father was a good businessman, but he didn't retain that wealth. That's why some of the commentaries say, you see, Yitzchak was living with Esav later on in his life. Why didn't he have his own house? Couldn't have his own servants take care of him? He needed to be with his son and daughters-in-law? The answer is no. He didn't have that capacity. So then Esav says, what am I inheriting from Yitzchak? What do I care? You could have this inheritance. And that's one interpretation, the way the Ran and Drash HaSaran interprets this whole story, combined with an Ibn Ezra. There's another interpretation. Esav says, you know, I'm going to die anyways. What he says to Yaakov is, tell me, you religious folk, did you notice that people don't die because they're religious? I noticed that today Nimrod and Avraham Avinu died. So you see, being righteous doesn't give you eternity. Being righteous, well, the righteous die too. Hine anochi olech lamut. I'm going to die just like everyone else. If Avraham died, everyone dies, right? V'lama zeli b'chora. So what do I need this? That I have the rights to the firstborn? That I'm the one who's the continuation of the family? Who cares? Look, it doesn't get you anywhere. And so Esav walks out mocking Yaakov. He thinks he's got the better end of the deal. And he tells people about it. And people start calling Esav Edom. You sold the rights to be called after the best family in the world for something red? What'd you say? Give me some of that red stuff. You didn't even know what was in the pot. But you wanted some of it and you were willing to give up your rights over that. So Esav gets the nickname Edom. So, Esav is starting to make a reputation for himself, but Yitzchak is unaware of it. And Esav keeps bringing Yitzchak good food, and he keeps asking Yitzchak all kinds of good questions, and he gives the impression that he is overly pious. Be careful of people who give the impression they're overly pious. It says, Yanai, the king, was lying on his deathbed. His wife asked him, what am I going to do with the rabbis? They hate you. Because he was a Sadducee, he didn't go with tradition. So he said, don't worry, they won't touch you. You don't have to worry about those who are pious. You don't have to worry about those who are overtly sinful. What you have to worry about are those people that are externally pious and internally they're sinful. That's where you have to worry. So now there is a second famine in the world. The first famine in the world was in Avram's time. The second famine in the world is in Yitzchak's time. And Yitzchak figures he'll go the way his father did, and he goes down to Egypt. But God appears to him and says, no, you can't do that. And this is one of the recurring themes in Rav Hershel Schachter's Shiurim. When Rav Hershel Schachter is asked to describe modern orthodoxy, he says, this is the explanation. He says, when you think you can just repeat what the previous generation did without understanding that your situation in life is different, you come to mistakes. So he claims his definition of modern orthodoxy is the understanding that things changed and knowing how to work within tradition to adapt to the modern day. So at any rate, Yitzchak goes down to Avimelech, and the term Avimelech is like president. And he figured that it'll be good to him. And Avimelech is wondering, who is that girl with him? Now this is a little strange, because Avram came, it was only him and Sarah. Yitzchak's coming with two kids, and they're 15, 16 years old. So what were they thinking? Where's his wife? Yitzchak says, that's my sister. And Avimelech peeks through the window and sees Yitzchak mitzachek et Rivka ishto. What does the word mitzachek mean? So mitzachek can mean to laugh. The term mitzachek, we find in Tanakh, refers to one of three things. Either murder, so he wasn't murdering her, or paganism, he wasn't worshipping idols with her, or being intimate. So there's a big question here halachically. How could he say she was his sister and then be intimate with her? Because if you've declared to the public that you're prohibited with this woman, so how could you do something behind closed doors that contradicts what you've said? So there's an interesting response in the Rama. The Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, got the following question. There was a woman who kept miscarrying. And she thought the reason she was miscarrying was because of the evil eye, that people kept looking at her and hearing that she was pregnant, so she'd miscarry. So what they wanted to do was to let people think that she was menstruating. Anytime people would see them, they'd think that she was in a prohibitive state. And then no one would think she became pregnant. They were very concerned about the evil eye. So they asked the Rama, but behind closed doors, could we live as husband and wife? We know that we're permitted. So one of the proofs the Rama brings is from our parsha. How could Yitzchak do things behind closed doors when he publicly said, I'm prohibited with this woman? So that's one of the proofs, that even though you say something publicly, if you know the truth is different, so you're not necessarily bound by what you've said publicly. So Yitzchak is caught, and Avimelech asks him, hey, what you doing? Yitzchak obviously had the same concern his father did. Notice the difference between Yitzchak and Avram. Avram's wife was abducted. Yitzchak's wife was almost abducted, but she wasn't abducted. Yitzchak lives a life which is very, very difficult. It's like being the son of Bill Gates. You know your future's made. What do you have to worry about? You'll get a degree, you won't get a degree. Who cares? So Yitzchak is born, and there's this promise. You're the chosen people. In four generations, you're coming back. So on the one hand, Yitzchak's life should be pretty complacent. But on the other hand, he saw how God is unpredictable. God told his father, go slaughter him after all those promises. And only in the last second does God say, okay, no, that's not what I meant. So there's this balance where Yitzchak on the one hand knows there's this promise that he's the continuation and the people of Israel will grow through him. On the other hand, he's seen that things are not as projectable as he'd like or as he'd think. God tells him, I want you to stay here. You don't leave Israel. And God says, I will fulfill the promise with you. You will have the land, this land, the land of Israel. And this is where Yitzchak got the promise. Originally, Avram had a promise, but Yitzchak hadn't yet heard that he was the continuum. This is where Hashem told him he will be the continuum. There's a big discussion here. God tells him, you'll keep, because I love Avram, because of all the different things he kept in the Torah, and it's not so clear what he was talking about. That Nachmanides says that Yitzchak said, the kids are from another wife. They're not from her, not from Rebekah. So he covered up on that also. He digs the wells and they fill the wells and they give them different names. And the Ramban Nachmanides says the names of the wells correspond to the three temples. Different discussions how they correspond to the temples. And then Avimelech comes to Abraham and he tells him something which Chazal tells an allegory. You guys probably know it from Aesop's fables. The lion got a bone stuck in his throat, and he says, whoever takes it out of my throat will get a great reward. So the bird called the agron, I guess in English that would be the stork, comes with his long neck and his long beak, and he pulls out the bone from the throat of the lion, and he comes to the lion and says, okay, now give me the great gift. And the lion looks at him and says, you were in a lion's mouth and you weren't eaten, and you want something more than that? So too, Avimelech tells Yitzchak, we did such kindness for you. You came to us and we sent you off in peace. You came to Philistine territory and you walked out alive and unscathed. We didn't take your wife from you. We're such good people. We want a pact of peace. So, why did they want this pact? Because one reason is they had seen Abraham take down four kings. So they figured these people are scary people. Number two, they knew God made a promise to Abraham, so they wanted to hold on to the land as long as they could by making these treaties. We won't bother you, you don't bother us. Esav gets married, and his wives embitter Yitzchak and Yitzchak. Why Yitzchak more than Rebekah? So here there are two understandings in the Medrash, and both are important. One understanding is that Rebekah was used to it from her father's house. Yitzchak wasn't. And this is a concept which is applicable halachically too. Sometimes a person that grew up with immodesty is less affected by immodesty because he's used it. He's seen it all the time. So then it's not as potent when he has to deal with it. So Rebekah grew up with all this paganism at home. So when Esav's wives start offering their incense to their idols, she's less hurt by it than Isaac. But there's another Medrash. And the Medrash says, what's this similar to? If you have two vessels and you clank them together. So which one wins? If they're both earthenware, they'll both break. But if one is made of bone and the other one is made of earthenware, then the one made of bone will destroy the one made of earthenware. So too the Medrash says, man was made from the earth, he's earthenware. Woman was made from man's bone, from man's rib, she's bone. Who wins when there's a clash? Woman wins. So bone versus bone can last. They'll clank and they'll both walk away whole. So Rebekah can put up with bothersome daughters-in-law. But Isaac can't. A man could never put up with a woman that's going to try to destroy him. If she's going to try to destroy him, you can't stand up to a woman. So men think they're stronger. But the Medrash teaches us there's more to the story. If the woman decides she's all out against you, then a woman could stand up to a woman. But a man, he's finished. So Yitzchak's eyes dim. And there are interesting comments as to why his eyes dimmed. One understanding is because he took bribes. His firstborn son is bribing him. And Chazal say you take a bribe, then that causes a person to go blind. So Yitzchak goes blind. The second understanding is because the what? Oh, we'll get there. The second, I don't have to tell you. The second understanding is that it says in Talmud, you're not supposed to look at a wicked person. And when you look at a wicked person, so that affects a person long term. The Talmud tells us there were different rabbis who had exceptional longevity, and their students would ask them, why did you merit such longevity? So one of them said, I never looked a wicked person in the face. I never looked at them. Now, it's interesting. The Yemenites have a custom. If you ever see an ancient Yemenite talking to an Arab, they look down. They'll never look them in the eye. Yemenites, when they talk to Arabs, they always look down. They will never look them in the eye. I was once talking to a worker in the yeshiva, and a Yemenite friend of mine walked by, and he said, why did you look him in the eye? I said, what's wrong? In America, it's considered impolite to look down when you're talking to someone. So he said to me, you should know, spiritually, when you look someone in the eye, they feed off of you. There's a mutual feeding off of the one off of the other when you look someone in the eye. And you won't catch an ancient Yemenite looking an Arab in the eye. So that was news to me. I noticed afterwards that all the old Yemenites, whenever they talk, they look down. And I always thought it was so rude. You know, why can't you look the guy in the eye? They won't look him in the eye.
What does it mean that you feed off of?
I don't know. I'm telling you what he told me. I didn't say it. He said it. The third understanding is this goes back. If you recall, we discussed that Avimelech cursed Sarah when he sent her off. He said, this should cover your eyes. And he meant the dual meaning. This should be a covering for the fact that I treated you improperly. But he really meant the curse in it too, that you should really go blind from this. But he couldn't say it, so he said it nicely. And the fourth understanding is that there's a verse which says the following. Matzdik rasha umarshia tzadik toavat Hashem gam shneihem. If a person speaks about the wicked like they're pious, or like the pious that they're wicked, God despises both. God doesn't like when people play these games. If he's a wicked person, say he's wicked. If he's a pious person, say he's pious. Sometimes people they play these games. No, he didn't mean so bad. Why do you say that? I remember I was at an event where there was someone from Peace Now. So the guy, some of the people there wouldn't shake his hands because he shaked Arafat's hands. And his own son was murdered by Palestinians. So this guy was there, and then people were around talking to him. So one of the people asked him, you know, you met Arafat face to face, what's he like? So the guy said, he's like a warm grandfather type. And I was like ready to puke. He's like, yeah, the guy was behind the murder of your own son, and you're telling me he's like a warm grandfather type? So sometimes people think if you take something wicked and you make it look nice, that's good. That shows you're extra good. No. God says, I despise someone who takes what's wicked and makes it look pious. No. And according to one understanding in our sages, the reason Yitzchak went blind, and remember, going blind is the equivalent of dying. Our sages say one of the people who are considered dead, even as they're alive, is a person that's blind. It's considered like he's not really living. You know, he's very limited in what he can do. So this was a punishment because he was matzdik rasha, because he took his wicked son and kept saying, well, he has this good quality and that good quality. And Rivka is going to come in our parsha to save him from doing the end of the pasuk. What does the end of the pasuk say? Marshia tzaddik. One who takes the righteous and says, ah, oh, he's not pious enough. He's really not living up to what he should be doing. Yeah?
These concepts are foreign, and they're interesting. It's just, you know, anybody who, let's say, example, if somebody is the head of an organization that murders your own child, and you say, he's trying to say, that's not the real him. He comes across in his shell that way. It's inconceivable that someone would say, if that person really is a warm grandfather type. It seems inconceivable. But anyway, and the Yemenite guy who looks down, even though it's upset in the American norms, you can't do that because this is so strong. But if you really believe that the other guy's energy is going to hurt you and take some, you have to do it with everybody. Because unless you're a prophet, who do you know? How do you know who this guy? He could be one of these false pious people. You know, but how does someone know? The guy who said, all my life I never looked at a evil person, I mean, that's a statement that implies he knew the essence of everybody he was looking at. That's pretty hard.
I was once talking to a Rav, and I wouldn't have believed the story if I wasn't there. This story happened not so long ago. And it's late at night, and we're talking, and suddenly he jumps off the sidewalk. He jumps off the sidewalk, and I said, what happened? He said, who's that person who just walked by? So I told him who it was. He says, no, who's that person that just walked by? I knew the man was at least a suspected child molester. But I didn't say anything. I just said the good things I knew about him. I didn't say a word. He was like, no, something's wrong there. Something's like, he didn't talk to the guy. He said to me, didn't you sense those evil vibes when he just walked by? I said, no. You know, okay. So I'm saying some people have a sense.
For
some people.
I mean, there's sure people on levels that I don't think it's. Yeah, these people who say it's just like, you know, you're describing Yitzhak Avinu. I mean, this guy's a giant. What do we hear? He lived with Esau. He spoiled his kids. And the Medrash I heard before that is after the Ken, he went to live with Ishmael in a gar. So, I mean, he seems to have done things that seem, you know, a little bit, like you said, maybe wasn't a good businessman and different things. On the other hand, this is a Yitzhak Avinu. It's got to be, you know, it's crazy to get the idea that he was a nincompoop or, you know, fooled by...
No, I was misrepresenting it then. Sometimes when a person is a spectacular... No. I was stressing one side and I took the other side as a given. So I didn't represent it well, and I'm happy you brought it up. When a person is extra pious, and when a person grows up and the focus is, you're an olat tmima, you're designated for God. You can't leave the country, right? So then he's brought up with all the fine venison from his father. Think about it. He's the child they've been praying for 100 years. The Medrash says that Sarah used to fast day and night, praying that she should finally have this child. There's a whole medrash about, maybe tomorrow night, if you guys want, remind me, we'll learn it. A fascinating medrash about how Avram had to think, how am I going to get Sarah to agree to let him go to the Akedah? So the medrash discusses, Avram says, Sarah went through such pains to get this child, and now I'm going to take him. What do I do? So the medrash goes, it's an interesting medrash about how Avram really pulled the wool over Sarah's eyes, and then it backfired, right? Sarah ended up finding out the wrong way, but he was worried about that. That's why that's why he did it that way. But so this is a child that they fasted, they prayed for, and finally he's born. And then after that Akedah, you could only imagine how Avram was devastated and how Sarah either was devastated or died or whatever. And then he's growing up in a difficult setting. And then he's constantly trained in being a God-fearing person and being focused on growth, and he was exceptionally spiritual. You see that in many ways he was greater than Avram. I mean, he was on a spiritually higher level. Now, sometimes when someone is spiritually higher, so they have greater capacity to see what's good. And even in the face of adversity, they could see what's good. And then sometimes it's very hard to draw the line. Where do you stop and say, okay, here I should not be saying what's good anymore? When Chazal point out these faults about Yitzhak Avinu, Chazal amplify them. Chazal magnify them. And the point is to teach us a lesson. But our tradition is that Chazal worded it strongly when in essence it was something minuscule. Meaning it was a fine point that he was off on. We express it with all the bombacity. Look at what he did. Because we have to learn from it. But our tradition is that when Chazal worded that way, and there are many places where the Talmud spells this out, Chazal were wording it harshly to express the concept. But in essence, it wasn't as harsh as Chazal were wording it. I mean, so, at any rate, Esav does come and ask him all the right questions. And then Yitzchak reaches his birthday that's 5 years earlier than his father's passing, like was mentioned earlier. And he tells Esav, okay, I want to bless you. I want to give you a blessing about succeeding in this world. I don't know when I'm going to die. So I want you to go hunt, bring a good meal. And after a good meal, I'll give you a blessing. So Esav goes out hunting. And the Medrash says every time he'd catch a good deer, he wanted to catch two. Every time he'd catch one, an angel would come and free that one. And he'd catch the second and come back and see that one was lost. Rebecca hears what's going on, and she tells Yaakov, I want you to go in. And Yaakov's a grown man, and he starts crying. He says, Ma, me? Lie? No. She says, yeah, I told you to go. And he says, but if Dad's going to figure out I'm a liar, I'm going to get cursed, I'm not going to get blessed. And the general approach of the commentaries is that Yaakov benefited from the blessings. You see that Yitzchak ultimately said, Gam baruch yeh. I validate the blessing. And you see Yitzchak calls him in and gives him another blessing before he leaves at the end of the parasha. But there are those commentaries who say, this was a foolish thing to do. He gained nothing from it. He only gained from the blessing at the end of the parish. And you see that in this blessing, Yitzchak does not give the land of Israel. He does not say, you will be the continuum of me and my father. He gives him a blessing of bounty. He gives him a blessing of plenty. He gives him a blessing of success among the nations. But he doesn't give him the blessing, you will get the land of Israel and you will be the continuum of Avram. He doesn't say that when he thinks it's Esav. When we learned Drasho Saran, so the Ran asked, what benefit is there getting a blessing? He thinks he's blessing Esav. And really he's blessing Yaakov. So what did Yaakov gain from that? So the Ran says, that's if you're assuming the blessing is Yitzchak talking. But if the blessing is really God, he's waiting and he's saying, let God settle and guide the blessing. So then God did just that. Only Yitzchak wanted to focus it on Esav, and God said, very good, it's going for Yaakov. So Yaakov tells his mother, you know, if my father hugs me and kisses me, he's going to feel I'm not hairy, my brother's all hairy. So they took some goat's hair and put it under his clothing so that the hair would stick out beyond the nape of his neck and the outside his sleeves of his shoulders. And either their voices were similar or Yaakov knew how to change his voice to sound like Esav. And Rivka says, don't worry if your dad curses you, he'll curse me. What does that mean, he'll curse me? So Rivka says, well, if he sees you try to trick him, what's he going to say? Oh yeah, yeah, he must have learned from his mother. Because he knows I come from a family of tricksters. So don't worry, he's not going to curse you, he's going to curse me. What's his mother put him up to, or how did his mother bring him up? So it's interesting, the Pasuk shows us in many ways, if you look closely at the Pasuk indicates many times that Rebecca was right. And you see, God sided with Rebecca and with Yaakov, and even Yitzchak sided with them ultimately. And so Yaakov gains the blessings, even though Yitzchak keeps trying to figure it out, and Yaakov gets the blessings of bounty in this world as well. And this is an important concept that the Torah doesn't want us to live an ascetic life. And then Yaakov has to run because Esav wants to kill him over it. And that's the end of the parasha where Rebekah and Yaakov present it to Yitzchak. Really, Rebekah presents it to Yitzchak. We have to get a good shidduch for our kid. And so they send Yaakov off. And Yaakov's going to go looking for a shidduch. And Esav is waiting for Yaakov's return to take revenge. And that is, again, a hallmark of Esav that he holds on to his vengeance. And Yaakov goes off in the middle of the night. And that's where Parsha leaves us, where Yaakov goes out of Israel, theoretically going to look for a shidduch. Realistically, he first goes to Beis Medrash for 14 years, and then we begin next week's Parsha.